This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. Mexican officials are putting a positive face on ongoing talks in Washington to avert U.S. tariffs, but President Trump has tweeted that more progress must be made on the immigration issue. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn.
After leaving the White House without a deal to block threatened tariffs, Mexico's Foreign Secretary Marcelo Ebrard says they'll keep talking with the Trump administration.
We are optimistic because we have a good meeting.
He says he didn't even get into the specifics of the tariffs with Vice President Pence and the Secretary of State because they're focusing on immigration and asylum seekers from Central America. One reporter asked Ebrard if he thinks President Trump understands economic policy in regard to tariffs.
I'm not the proper authority to judge something like that.
President Trump overseas tweeted progress is being made, but not nearly enough, and that the tariffs will likely go into effect Monday. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
About 1,000 Central American migrants were intercepted in Mexico near the border with Guatemala. AP's Ed Donahue.
The group included many women and children. Military police, immigration agents, and federal police blocked their advance, showing a tougher new stance. But this man says Mexican officials opened the door and allowed them through because they came calmly and did not come to cause problems. Later, unarmed agents wrestled some migrants who resisted to the ground, but the vast majority complied and boarded buses or immigration agency vans to an immigration detention center. This man says his group is from Honduras. He says life is very hard in Honduras. Many say they were getting away from gang violence. I'm Ed Donahue.
The UN humanitarian chief appealed Wednesday for urgently needed funding to prevent wide-scale hunger in the Horn of Africa after another difficult rainy season. This is VOA News. The day before D-Day's 75th anniversary, those who took part in the invasion on the French coast were honored in southern England. AP correspondent Sagar Magani.
Near where thousands of troops launched the invasion, it was an international celebration. World leaders marking the start of Europe's liberation from the Nazis. Queen Elizabeth was a mechanic in the war and said many thought D-Day's 60th anniversary commemoration might be the last one.
But the wartime generation, my generation, is resilient.
An unusually personal note from the Queen, who said thank you to a crowd including several hundred World War II veterans. The number of D-Day vets is dwindling, and 94-year-old Donald Hitchcock says it's on each one to keep the memories going.
Let us live on, because lest we forget, we will not forget.
I'm Sagar Magani.
As social media companies face mounting criticism that their platforms foster extremism, YouTube is tightening its hate speech policies. More from AP correspondent Jennifer King.
YouTube says they're changing their hate speech policies. They're going to prohibit more kinds of videos, including those with white supremacist and neo-Nazi content. They're also removing videos that deny certain events took place, like the Holocaust or the Sandy Hook school shooting. The company says they're prohibiting videos that allege any group is superior to justify discrimination, segregation, or exclusion. They'll be prohibiting videos that promote violence or hatred. Thousands of videos will be removed under the new rules. YouTube says the new policies will take effect immediately. I'm Jennifer King.
And half the American adults say fake news is a bigger problem than racism, terrorism, or climate change. That's according to a new survey. AP's Shelley Adler.
It's a survey from the Pew Research Center, and it says a majority of Americans believe journalists have the responsibility for fixing the misinformation problem. Pew also found that differences in political affiliation are a major factor in how people think about fake news. Republicans are more likely than Democrats to see made-up information and think it's a big problem. They will also blame journalists for it. Shelley Adler, Washington.
A U.S. citizen who leaked the names of more than 14,000 HIV-positive people in Singapore has been found guilty by a U.S. court of illegally transferring personal data and threatening the Singapore government. Singapore deported Mickey Ferrara Broches last year after convicting him of numerous drug-related and fraud offenses, including lying about his own HIV status. Find more at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, June 6th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sudanese protesters decline an offer to resume negotiations with the military.
Our reply is a total rejection for any offer coming from the military council. What happened 2 days ago is exactly what we expect from them, since they are like an extension for Omar al-Bashir.
Elami Shingraya is a member of the political bureau of the 27 November movement. Survivors of this week's security crackdown in Sudan described their ordeal. A Zimbabwe human rights activist said his home was raided this week by security forces, and Liberian police arrested university student leaders amid rising tensions ahead of tomorrow's anti-government protest.
This is an unprovoked attack on the student community, and we are giving the government 48 hours to release those student leaders. Otherwise, we will need thousands of students in the street tomorrow, even before June 7th.
Martin Cawley is Secretary General of the Student Unification Party at the University of Liberia. We'll also talk with the Inspector General of the Liberian National Police. And Kenyan youth see green in collecting garbage. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Protest leaders in Sudan have rejected a proposal to negotiate with the ruling military council. A spokesman for the Sudanese Professionals Association said Wednesday that the call by General Abdel Fattah Burhan is not serious. Security forces have killed at least 100 protesters since last week in a violent crackdown. Elamin Shingraya is a member of the political bureau of the 27 November movement. He says the protest will continue until the military is forced to hand over power to a civilian authority.
Our reply is a total rejection for any offer coming from the military council. What happened 2 days ago is exactly what we expect from them, since they are like an extension for Omar al-Bashir. And we think they are very connected with the Saudi and the Emirates and the Egyptian, and what they did, we are in shock. Actually, the whole nation in shock, because now we lost more than, 60 of young men and women, and more than 400 people now in hospitals. So how can we deal with these people?
You mentioned Saudi Arabia. Are you suggesting that the Saudis have influence over the military junta in Khartoum?
Yes, actually, in Sudan, this is what we believe, that Al-Burhan, the head of that military council, and his deputy, Hemeti, they are running the country on behalf of the Saudis and the Emirates. Because in Saudi Arabia, they more care about what is happening in Yemen. And this military council provide them between 25,000 to 30,000 fighters from Darfur and from other parts of Sudan. And the Saudi pay them in billions of dollars. So it became very clear for us, these countries will never accept any democratic country near them or around in the area. They want Sudan to be like a follower. This is our problem. We have an army that is not connected or has any loyalty to the people and to the need of the country. They are more connected to the Gulf countries. This is why we will reject any offer from them. And we believe that the only way for our people and our country to pass this situation is by having a civilian heading the government. And also, we have to investigate all the violations that had been committed in the last 3 months.
Let me ask you, because from the beginning, the military council offered the protesters something, even more participation in a transitional government, but you turned it down. Did you bargain for more than you were supposed to?
I should say it clearly. There is some mistake from our side. The first mistake, we shouldn't sit with them in the first place as someone to negotiate. Our meeting should be, we should ask them to release this power. It shouldn't be like a negotiation, how much you give me and how much I will have from you. I think also our delegation gave them a kind of legitimacy. When we sit with them, we gave them like a legitimacy. And that is a mistake also.
Elamishin Graya is a member of the Political Bureau of the 27 November Movement. He was speaking with me from Washington, D.C. Doctors linked to the protests in Sudan say the death toll from attacks on protesters by Sudanese security forces has risen to 60. Hundreds of wounded are recovering in hospitals and homes across the city. But hospitals themselves have become targets, with gunmen surrounding healthcare centers and at times attempting to enter the facilities. Reporter Jason Patinkin gained rare access to one hospital and has this report from Khartoum.
Details are emerging on what appears to have been a brutal, coordinated assault on protesters in central Khartoum and those who tried to help the wounded. Sudan's ruling Transitional Military Council has claimed that security forces that raided the main protest site Monday only moved on criminal elements among the protesters. But survivors at Royal Care Hospital being treated for wounds told another story. Witnesses who spoke to reporters Tuesday blamed the attacks on the notorious Rapid Support Forces, a militia from Darfur led by Transitional Military Council's Deputy Chief Mohamed Hamdan Daglo. Police officers have also been accused of taking part in the assault, but witnesses said they were RSF troops wearing police uniforms based on their accents and behavior. Sitting in a wheelchair, Berdat Khadir said the RSF attacked once the regular army, who previously defended protesters, had left or were unarmed. He says they started attacking people once they knew that the army was no longer able to fight back. They were godless. They had no souls, says Khadir. These people are not Sudanese. We don't accept them among us. Even the dead, they were beating the dead who were on the ground, he says. 25-year-old student Mahmoud Abdullah showed bruises all over his back and shoulders, and his right arm was in a sling. He said after the RSF chased them from the streets, he hid with other students in Khartoum University's dormitories within the protest site. They, the RSF, told us to come out, but when we didn't come out, says Abdullah, they threw tear gas inside and then pointed their weapons at us. I opened the door to let them in, and they slapped me on both sides of the head, he says. I fell to the ground and they started beating me, says Abdullah. There were maybe 25 of them, hitting me with sticks, whips, the butts of their guns, whatever. Abdullah fled to a clinic where he says he passed out, only to wake up to troops entering. They beat the clinic people, asking, "Why are you helping him?" says Abdullah. They broke the arm of one of the clinic staff. They were whipped for trying to help me, he says. This is the ugliest human treatment possible. Witnesses at Royal Care Hospital say troops attacked again on Tuesday morning, firing on the medical facility as it was treating wounded protesters. One volunteer bringing food to wounded protesters, who did not wish to be named, said patients would suffer if the harassment continued.
There is no staff can reach the hospital. The doctors or other staff cannot reach to the hospital. We are now trying to call the doctors, and we have a lot of cases, open fractures, need urgent operation, but doctors cannot reach to the hospital.
With even hospitals coming under attack, it seems nowhere is safe in Sudan's capital from the security crackdown. Jason Patinkin for VOA News, Khartoum.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today's Thursday, June 6. Daybreak Africa times now 14 minutes past the hour. In Zimbabwe, the opposition movement for democratic change, led by Nelson Chamisa, says the country is now under an undeclared state of emergency as President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government has deployed soldiers in some cities amid reports of looming public protests over deteriorating economic conditions. Meanwhile, state security agents on Monday allegedly raided the house of Rashid Mahia, chairperson of the non-governmental organization Crisis Coalition in Zimbabwe. Mahia tells Marvelous Nyahui of VOA Zimbabwe service that his family is now living in fear of being victimized by state security agents.
At around 5 in the morning, two cars came to the place that I stay. And the two cars had about 7 occupants in there. And they harassed people at the gate, forced their way in to enter the compound where I stay, and then came to my house and knocked at the door. It is the lady who helped us the knock, and they said they wanted to see me. They wanted to see Rashid Mahir. And then she came to call to Rashid. There are people that are asking for you. But we couldn't open the door because we didn't know where. So that's when you got in touch with other human rights activists and tried to call the police that there are people that are coming and intimidating us at the office, in the house. So we called other human rights defenders to alert them that my life was at risk. The life of my family was at risk. And that's what happened. And they only left after having an hour when they were banging and knocking at the windows. I feel unsafe in the country of my birth. I feel unsafe from the government. I feel unsafe from the state. I'm a taxpayer. I pay taxes, but I feel unsafe because they're coming after innocent civilians. We have done nothing peaceable with citizens that have done nothing with guns and arms and guns as if we're in a war. We're not in a war. We're not in a war with the state.
Mr. Mahir, did these people identify themselves and did they tell you why they were visiting your house?
They did not identify themselves. They identified themselves at the gate as the police, but when they came to the house, they were asked who they were. They refused to identify themselves. They just said, we should open the door. How do you open the door to strangers? How do you open the door to people that have cars that are not marked? And this is a free Zimbabwe, and they said this is a new dispensation. They said this is a country that respects human rights and democracy. I don't even know what to say about that. I feel unsafe in my country. I feel unsafe because I'm a human rights defender. I feel unsafe because we are preaching peace in Zimbabwe. I feel unsafe because the state has decided to turn against its own citizens.
As it stands right now, you are already reporting to the police. Tell us a little bit about this. What's the current situation with you right now as we speak?
In January, they came after me and accused me of all sorts of false, malicious allegations. I surrendered myself to the police. I am out on bail. They are charging me with trying to subvert the constitutionally elected government. That's what they say. This is a case that is before the court. I report to the police on Mondays and Fridays. Is the bail condition. I'm residing at the place where I'm supposed to reside according to the bail condition. I'm not a threat to the state. I'm not a threat to anyone. I'm just advocating for that. So because of that, I think they are continuously coming, trying to look for excuses. People are angry. People are angry. I'm not people. I'm just one of the citizens. I'm an ordinary citizen who just wants to take care of his family and fighting for human rights in Zimbabwe.
Rashid Mahir is the chairperson of Crisis Coalition in Zimbabwe. He was speaking with Marvelous Nyawi from Harare with VOA Zimbabwe service. Tensions are high in the Liberian capital, Monrovia, ahead of tomorrow's anti-government protest. Organizers say the protests, dubbed Save the State protest, is being called to express concern about Liberia's current worsening economic situation and corruption. The University of Liberia student leadership has given the Liberian government 48 hours to release officers of the student body that is said were arrested by police on Wednesday. Also Wednesday, security forces laid siege to the home of Member of Parliament Yeke Koluba, a staunch critic of President George Weah. Martin Colley is a Secretary General of the Student Unification Party at the University of Liberia. He says the government is trying to intimidate the students to dampen enthusiasm ahead of Friday's anti-government protests.
The government of President Weah is instituting and provoking crisis in the country. This morning, heavily armed police officers from the Liberia National Police invaded the Capitol Hill campus of the University of Liberia and arrested some student leaders, particularly the chairman of the Student Unification Party. They also arrested the chair of the militant wing of SUP. They arrested the co-chair of the Women's Presidium. So the government has been instituting arbitrary arrests, especially against critical voices, youth leaders, and activists in the country. I had to totally escape their vicious and ruthless arrest. So I'm currently in my house speaking to you from Monrovia.
Did the government give any reasons for the arrests?
Not at all. They even attempted arresting Representative Yeke Koluba. This is the strategy, Mr. Boti. The government has instituted a vicious strategy to crack down on free assembly and free speech. The intent is before June 7th, want to arrest all of the critical voices and leaders of the protest. It is unfortunate, Mr. Boti, that the government will have another vicious plan and conspiracy on its sleeve to undermine the democratic values of our country. Why are they arresting us, Mr. Boti? What have we done? Have we committed any crime? They haven't told us our charge. On our criminal justice system, before you even institute arrest, there must be investigation. And a probable cause must be established. They haven't established any probable cause, yet they have arrested the chairman and two other members of our party.
This is an unprovoked attack on the student community, and we have given the government 48 hours to release those student leaders. Otherwise, we will need thousands of students in the street tomorrow, even before June 7th protest. Beginning this morning, if the government doesn't release the chairman of SUP, along with the other two student leaders, we can assure the government of President Weah that Monrovia will be restless. And I want to repeat, Monrovia will be restless. The students will be compelled to demand the unconditional arrest of Chairman Carlos Edison, Militant Chair Willie Bomo, and co-chair for the Women's Presidium, Leto Awili. They have done nothing wrong. What is wrong about saying the president should declare his after Mr. Bote? Is it a crime to say the president should stop speeding and building palaces around the country at the disadvantage of the ordinary people? Is it a crime, Mr. Bote, to tell the president to stop attacking the press? Is it a crime, Mr. Bote, to say corruption should stop? Is it a crime, Mr. Bote, for us to assemble in accordance with Article 17 of the 1986 Constitution, which guarantees our rights? Why are they threatening and intimidating us? So we are not going to back down. June 7th protest is going ahead. Because we said, Mr. Bote, that we will mobilize 50,000 students and youth across the country, and we are doing just that. This is the fear of the government. The actual intent was to arrest me along with the chairman. I have to narrowly escape, and currently I'm speaking to you from a high house. The government has become dictatorial, autocratic against its own people, and this is unacceptable in the context of democracy. If the student leaders are not released before 12 noon on Thursday, we can assure you that thousands of university students, not only from the state-run university, but private university students will also join us in solidarity to press the government forward for the unconditional release of those student leaders.
Martin Colley is Secretary General of the Student Unification Party at the University of Liberia. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. Liberian police say they arrested some officers of the University of Liberia student leadership Wednesday because the students were provocative and tried to disrupt the flow of traffic. The arrest came as tensions are running high in the country ahead of tomorrow's anti-government protest over worsening economic conditions and corruption. Patrick Sudu, Inspector General of the Liberia National Police, denies the police are trying to intimidate the students to dampen enthusiasm ahead of Friday's anti-government protest.
We get a series of students or student leaders who were at central headquarters, and we saw some group of guys. They came at the front of the central headquarters. They blocked the road, and they were all chanting and demanding the release of Honorable Yekter Koluba. Officers went to them, asked them to please step aside and allow the traffic to flow. And of course, somebody will come and talk to them. They refused. Blatantly, and they challenged the officers that they will not allow the traffic to flow, but rather that demands were they have the representative release along with other people who were arrested. So the officers trying to open the road immediately, they started stoning the officers. Three of our officers were wounded, one have a broken tooth. As we speak, we took him to the hospital. Immediately when they started, the officers had no option but to make some arrests. So we did not see them as students because they were not in the poster of being students of riot, but rather they came as rioters.
Mr. Inspector General, you said the students were demanding the release of Honorable Yekter Koluba. Did your police officers arrest Honorable Yekter Koluba, and why?
We brought Yekter in for questioning. Well, we want to question him because somebody was victimized in his yard. The guy was severely beaten, and he was unconscious. And later on, when he came consciousness at the hospital, he informed the police that it was based upon the follow instruction of Honorable Yekter Koluba that he was beating. He was beating with iron, with stick. His face were all bruised up. I mean, it was very horrific. So we looking at what was done to this man. Nobody is above the law. He actually had a representative campaign, so I have to find out what actually obtained in his premises.
Mr. Inspector General, based on what you're telling me and what the students are saying happened, can it be said that the police are trying to provoke the protesters?
It's kind of strange to hear from you that the police trying to provoke protesters. We have had a lot of protests in Monrovia, and there has never been a time where protesters were beaten or arrested by any police officer. So to say the police were the one who agitated the crowd to do what they did, I mean, I'm giving a bad because if you have a group of people marching at the headquarters of the Liberian National Police for us to sit back, to watch them, even obstruct the movement of other peaceful citizens. I think that would be a demerit on the part of the police.
Mr. Inspector General, it's always nice to speak with you, and thank you very much.
You are always welcome, sir.
Patrick Sudu is the Inspector General of the Liberia National Police. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. According to the United Nations, uncollected garbage is a growing problem in cities around the globe, especially in areas with fast-rising populations. But there are solutions, as a youth group in Kenya's capital is showing. Roald Elmadol reports from the Matari slum in Nairobi.
My name's Isaac Mutisia Moasa, and I'm 35 years old, and I'm the co-founder of the Mathare Environmental Conservation Youth Group.
We're in the Mathare slum of Nairobi. Six-story high brick apartment buildings are around us. Ladies selling groceries and men selling plastics. Isaac Mutisia with his colleagues enter a building and climb up the narrow stairs. They come out again with a big dustbin full of garbage, emitting an obnoxious stench. And some 200,000 people are believed to live in Mathare, in an area of just 2 square kilometers. The slum is not only congested with people, but also with their garbage. According to the United Nations, one city dweller produces 1 kilogram of garbage per day. And for Mathare, it means that every day 200,000 kilograms of trash finds its way into a public space. And while taking a break from carrying garbage cans, Isaac Mutisia says that collecting waste is a dire necessity.
When you have like a lot of people who live in one area and there's no proper way of handling waste, you find that everyone dumps waste everywhere.
And Mutisia says the waste was piling up on street corners and illegal dumping sites. Doctors warn about the health effects of garbage, especially for children. And Doris Shiundi is a physician in a local clinic. In the next room is a nurse giving a sick baby a checkup.
When you have a lot of garbage in the street, especially here in Mathare, most of the time we see patients who come here with their diarrhea, sometimes cholera. Other they just come with food poisoning because they eat on the street.
And this situation led Mutisia to do something to clean up the garbage and at the same time meet another challenge.
We saw the importance of making our community clean and also creating employment amongst ourselves, because there was a challenge of unemployment.
Mutisia now has 100 group members collecting waste in the area, making money from households that pay to have their trash hauled away. And once collected, the waste is brought to a legal dumping site. The youth's effort has caught the attention of local government officials, like Thomas Arimu.
We encourage the youths to copy what Kaka are doing to the neighboring community, so that it will become helpful.
Mutisia, meanwhile, is on the way to his next mission. Ruth Almondorp for VOA News, Nairobi.
And that's it for this Thursday, June 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Greg Burns, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Bandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.